Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Mad Jin. With guest co-hosts...
The Alpha Shard, Fuzzy Fractal.
Oh, come on, Phil.
Wake up, little Philly. I don't know where that came from. I'm sorry.
Somebody needs to fill him in that he's on.
Yeah, that's much better than mine.
Thanks for the bumper to the episode, by the way, already.
Yes.
Scott brought a shovel to dig a hole, but the question is, who's going in it? And Andrew, segue that to the start of the show.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 221. I am here with your regular host, Dan Q.
2 + 2 + 1 = 5.
The Mian Team.
I'm always ready with my shovel.
Imagine.
Can I borrow his shovel so I can smack Dan over the head?
And yes. Another guest co-host, Scott Alfshard.
We don't need no stinking trolls.
2K Games in a press release has said that 29 million units of the Civilization series has been sold. Not like one site which said that Civilization Beyond Earth had sold 29 million units. No.
Yep.
I'm not going to name them to protect the guilty. But more than 29 million units sold to date. So that's for the entire Civilization franchise, you know, more than 20 years. And then I read about sales of the latest Grand Theft Auto and I cry a little bit. Mm. If you have a news item and it's quoting from or reporting on an official press release, if it doesn't link to the official press release, go somewhere else. And B, if it does have a link to the official press release, go read it for yourself as well. Just to make certain that someone wasn't reading without really absorbing what it was that they were reading.
Yeah, sometimes I have the problem with when people read between the lines. They see what they want to see instead of what's actually going on. They see a gap and then they put in what they think is the missing information, which, you know, could a lot of times be wrong.
That's a good point.
Are triremes at all acceptable for coastal sieges? This is from the Cult of Scarrow. And more details, of course, is that he's playing a game on extended eras, so it's going to take a lot longer to jump through to the next water-based stuff, and would rather not wait 30 or more turns for galleasses. So the question for the day is, can you use triremes to attack coastal cities?
Yes.
Well, the general answer is no.
But, I think it would depend on the level.
Yeah. The very first response, basically, don't see why not, except unless, of course, the city has vastly more strength than your trireme, which is entirely plausible very, very quickly. They build a wall or is on a hill. You can get cities that have way more strength than the triremes. Otherwise, yes, it is possible to smash into it, but preferably you have far more than one tile to attack from.
Yes.
If there's two or three hexes of water next to the city, then you can bring in a fleet and hit it one turn.
Multiple times.
Swap them out. Hit it one turn, get hit, swap out, wounded with fresh units, hit it again. That's plausible.
I was reading more of the thread, and to be more specific on his situation, it says it's early classical era and that he can't have more than walls, and the city's like pop 8, so it doesn't sound like this is going to work.
I'd say if the city is more than 20 hit points, it's probably not going to be possible. If you have a tile nearby where you can kind of swap the triremes out and heal them as you continue to attack back and forth, then maybe you could make it work, but it's going to be pretty difficult.
Like, you're attacking it on land, too, but you need a little bit more damage? Maybe.
Then, yeah.
I gotta say, when I saw the thread title, the concept of a trireme sieging, like, I always think in terms of Civ that the cities are being attacked, not sieging, because that's actually happening.
Different. In that respect, that would be Dromans doing the siege warfare. And if you have Dromans, absolutely, attack as many cities as you want. Or if you're playing Carthage and you have quad creams, then yes, because they have higher base combat strength.
Yeah, 13 instead of 10.
Yeah.
Same cost.
Yeah, the question is it going to be worth the amount of production you're going to spend on building those early boats and getting them there in time? Maybe if you have the Great Lighthouse, you can get them there a little bit faster, but
Capelago.
Is it still going to be worth the opportunity cost?
If they put up walls, that adds a lot of hit points to the cities. But if they have 75% more combat strength on that city, then you're going to take a lot more damage per hit than you're going to do, which can cause problems. But there are three water tiles next to it, and you have 5 to 6 triremes. Then if you just use the insta-heal promotions constantly on your triremes, you should be okay. Now, you have to be careful, because if they have a bunch of ranged units on the coast, archers and stuff like that, then yeah, you could have a lot of issues, because they'll just shoot back and you can't do anything about it.
Along with whatever navy they might have in the vicinity that could also attack you, you might want to scout around and make certain that there aren't that many, if any, because the last thing you would want is to be like, hey, look at that, there's no archers, I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to attack the city. Yeah, I can bombard me on the next turn over, but I'll just probably end up using the auto heal and or swipe out, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, oh, your trireme was attacked by another trireme. Oh, crap.
A more useful way to use triremes in early combat situations is just to use them to pillage naval trade routes. Attack from land, but use the triremes to kind of supplement your income by pillaging their trade routes at the same time. Better use of your resources, though.
And if they have a lot of fish or other such water-based resources, then just dropping a trireme outside of city range for bombardment. Yeah, just sit there, and then you blockade all those water tiles, and they can't do anything about it without building a fleet of their own. Prevent them from growing if they're heavily using those water-based resources. Especially if they get a lighthouse quickly, that will slow them down in a major way.
If you've already committed and you just can't get over that hump and take the city, give up and go use them elsewhere. Or just disband the units.
Never disband, because you can always upgrade to more useful units later.
Well, provided you have the gold.
Money.
Well, if you've used your triremes to pillage all those trade routes early on and get trade routes yourself.
And bully city-states and other such things, then yeah.
Dan's favorite pastime.
Really, the spending of all that effort on triremes sort of means that you do want something out of it. And gold, I don't think, is the best answer to the what you get out of it. At least one city.
Yeah, I would say only really if you're planning on going for a naval-based military anyway, like you're playing England or a civ like that, it might make sense to get some of these early naval units out and start using them. But if you're a land-based civ, it's just not going to be the best use of your resources to try to build a bunch of boats.
Why build outside of the workable radius? And that is by, damn it, I give up. Also on that. aside from luxury and strategic resources, it seems a tad pointless to build improvements since you don't get the yields from tiles. Yeah.
You're not exactly allowed to build farms and mines outside your culture borders.
Well, yeah, but you can get culture borders that exceed your workable radius. In other words, you can make improvements that you can't work with your current cities. Mm. And there's very few times you'd want to do it aside from, like, building roads between two strategic points. Unless you're pre-improving to drop another city, which is not going to be too common because you don't want to build so many workers and micromanage them so poorly that you have tons and tons of workers to go pre-building improvements on future city sites.
And you had to get past that through range of culture border expansion. Also not something that's going to happen very early if you're expanding. But yeah, lots of forts. If you want to do a fort wall.
Yeah.
That's useful, especially if you just slap down some nice little great generals in between all those fort walls.
And then you have situations like, okay, you want to plant the city, you conquer something from the AI, and now you can because it was culture before or something blocking you. So very late in the game, you just want another city there and you pre-improve for it, but it's not going to matter.
Moise, Polynesia's little tile improvement.
Still get the culture.
You can't work the tile, but the culture of the one tile that you do work gets boosted by all the other Moes around it. If the fourth ring is coastal and you can build one of those, then it'll boost up the one that you can work.
And there's some posters saying just for the looks. I can agree with, especially if you are rolling in the game late game and you feel like microing your workers still. That's valid. It's not really useful for an in-game effectiveness, but it's a valid reason all the same.
If you're that kind of player who likes that kind of immersion and sort of role-playing type aspects, then yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, there's that. And Electric 999999 also says, it costs nothing. Well, even if your workers don't have anything else to do, yeah, it is costing you something. It is costing you maintenance on that unit.
Star of Hope's like, Fedora, Fedora, Fedora. But that's only in city-state territories.
And that's specific to one civ.
Yeah.
Portugal.
There are a couple things that you do build outside of your territory, but we're talking about inside your own borders, not workable.
recorded for episode 220 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mean Team, Mad Jin, and Canis Albinus.
Sparrow's Raven is talking about problems with early game aliens on Beyond Earth.
Oh, they're the one where there's a nest every 2 feet?
Yeah. It seems like, in his perspective, that there are aliens that have extremely high spawn rates and seem to be very difficult to kill at the beginning. He has a picture later on that basically shows one nest and looks like 15 aliens within a very small area. So I'm guessing that's a wild land of some kind. Looks like a desert.
Looks like there are at least 2 alien nests. Maybe. Definitely 1 nest in there, and they always start with a lot of aliens and then spawn more as they go. But it's mostly wolf beetles, so those things.
Only wolf beetles is not an excuse for there being 20 of them.
No, that's fairly normal for a start. You have to clear out their garbagey stuff, otherwise they will spawn more.
They'll probably spawn more anyways.
Yeah, they'll continue to spawn more until you get rid of the stupid nest.
Especially in the early game, it's how close is that nest to you, number one. Number two, is that the direction where you want to go because you're thinking you want to settle there or it's on the way to an opponent? And then the other consideration is, as well, are aliens coming towards you from that location? At a certain point, if you don't deal with the aliens, then the aliens are going to deal with you, and it's just going to be whack-a-mole. So I think to a degree you can ignore them, but as the game goes on, if you allow them to multiply, then, you know, instead of an ounce of prevention, you now got to deal a pound of cure.
Only a pound?
Well, I don't want to scare people too much, Mackie. Mm. It's all a relative scale.
Yeah, so ultrasonic fence keeps siege worms away. You don't have to worry about siege worms or other aliens if you slap up the ultrasonic fence.
Well, within 2 hexes of your city, which, yes, this is important. You could still have some outer stuff wrecked, but that's core. Ultrasonic fence is core, especially if you have aliens near you. If they're off in a distance, then no, spend your production and or spend your energy on
something better.
Although not too late, because you probably do want these things called trade routes, and they're probably going to go a distance where they might be squished by a random alien.
What you also want to do is get 2 levels of affinity. That's the most important aspect of this that no one has actually said in this thread, I think. Get 2 levels of affinity. Doesn't matter which one. Doesn't matter if it's the one you want later or the one you want now. Level 2 affinity means that your soldiers are going to be at level 1 stronger than the wolf beetles and most other stuff. And level 2 affinity means that your rangers are going to be stronger than pretty much all the aliens. The difference between level 0 rangers and level 2 rangers, first upgrade for rangers, is immense when you're fighting siege worms. You either do 1 point of damage when you don't have them upgraded, or you do somewhere around 10, depending on the
you could actually kill the siege worm in your soldier's lifetime.
Yeah. What you want is open terrain. You want to shoot the siege worm from 2 hexes away and basically just sit there and kite it. Shoot it, back up, shoot it, back up, shoot it, back up. Stay 2 hexes away. 10 shots later, depending on how many rangers you have, depends on how many turns you've just wasted, killing it. But
scoot and shoot.
Yep.
So basically, just a couple soldiers in front, a couple rangers in back, just slow march through alien territory until they're all dead. Just let your soldiers defend, preferably on hills or other rough terrain. They will trash all the wolf beetles that attack them or everything else. Rangers clean up, keep moving forward, no problem. And you can get to level 3 and just
unless
get caught there's
by gobs of more miasma.
Yeah, be careful of the miasma. But
that's its own problem in and unto itself.
Yeah.
Starts where you're surrounded by the wild areas with the miasma and the nests all over the place, because it's really hard to press that stuff while you're taking damage from the miasma, even if you have some affinities. I would just expand away from it if at all possible. It's not worth the amount of investment to fight it.
Unless you want the nests and you go Harmony.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Or again, you may decide, yeah, I know there's an alien nest there, but man, I could really use that strategic resource, or that's going to block the AI from coming my way. It's going to be a really good for energy output. Okay, I need to get rid of you sooner rather than later.
Yeah, or that nest will keep the AI from expanding in that direction. Let's keep that, but then I'll plant soldiers on my side of the nest to prevent them from coming and bothering my cities and other stuff while I expand elsewhere. But leave the nest so that it will happily send off aliens to go bother the AI or the other player. You go that way. Have fun.
Don't forget, if they happen to be near water, you have some gunboats. That's yes. an option as well.
That is also an option, yes. Except that your gunboat will probably get wrecked by, like, sea dragons.
The sea-based aliens that, yes, ultrasonic fence will help in the immediate vicinity of your city, just like the reverse polarity will help your trade routes. However, if you decide, I'm going to take my units and cross the ocean to somewhere else...
Have fun with that.
Good luck with that.
Well, you don't want to just send the unit out completely. You probably want to scout ahead with, even if it becomes a sacrificial gunboat, so you know where they're congregated. It's like, don't go that way.
Yeah, gunboats are glass cannons, and while you definitely want to remember the glass part, you don't want to forget the cannon part. Because if you have a couple of them and you happen upon an alien in the water, unless it's like a Kraken and it's pretty early game, you can very often just one-shot that thing before it attacks you at all.
Yeah, well, it's like three gunboats after the first upgrade is enough to kill off a sea dragon.
Yeah.
Not enough to kill off a Kraken. You'll still lose pretty much all three of them.
Although they're faster than the Kraken, so as long as you're not moving crazy, you can at least avoid being in the Kraken's range.
Yeah, if you see one, you can run very, very far. And eventually, if you go purity, all of those plus movement bonuses that you get on your gunboats, especially with the observatory and that, can get converted to plus percent attack.
Yes.
And then that really makes them a nice cannon.
Yes, they hurt like crazy.
If you go to level 3, then you can get combat rovers and run stuff over and get all your flanking bonuses. So that's okay. But yeah, mostly you want rangers. Rangers behind soldiers, deals with aliens. Raptors and drones can be the only real pain in that respect. Stay out of the miasma.
You know, if there was a game setup option where you could just disable the aliens, that would take care of them in the early game as well as the later game. Oh, yeah.
Lol.
Oh, whoa, wait, that's not helpful.
No.
No barbarians, lol.
Dan is confused this with other games, apparently.
Well, we know why that option isn't there, because that was Fraxis' statement to tell us that the aliens were not equivalent to barbarians, because if you could disable aliens, then you can make the argument that they were treating them just like barbarians, where you could disable them and survive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah. Make sure you have a couple units to deal with the aliens that are floating around. Pretty much the point.
How many of you cheat with playing single player? And this is cold. We all know Dan loves his polls.
Oh, but it's a multi-option poll.
Yes.
It's true. It's true.
The different choices was I'll re-roll a start I don't like. Second option was I'll load an earlier save game if something doesn't go my way. I use Info Addict to see information not available in the game. I assume that's a mod.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
I use Unbalanced Mods, Brazil, All Uniques, American Domination, etc. I'll use IGE to add things in my favor. Is that like a world
in-game
map
editor?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Next one is I'll use exploits like Pillage Heal. I'm not sure what he means by that.
Bring a worker to go with you to that you can pillage somebody else's tile and then use the worker to fix it.
Pillage again? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll only play a top-tier civilization, Babylon 4, etc.
I don't think that counts as a cheat. It's in the game.
A couple of these are pretty obviously not cheats. They don't fit the definition, but whatever.
In fairness to the thread starter, he does put cheats in quotation marks, but still, some of these choices, I'm like, there's some loaded terminology here and qualifications as well, but yeah, we'll get to more of that.
You should have rephrased that option using a sieve like a crutch, like you only use one sieve, but even then, it's not really a cheat.
It's just a preference.
Yeah.
Like that's
so people like their crutch.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm
just getting in the spirit of the OP here. Come on.
I know.
As far as I'm concerned, I have re-rolled starts I didn't like, especially if they were horrible starts. I had a little bad habit in Civ 4 re-rolling. I was like, I want gold or gems. And now it doesn't matter in Civ 5. I have reload earlier save games all the time. I did realize this was a issue apparently now with save scumming. I thought it was it's an issue with some people.
Well, the qualification, if something doesn't go my way, I've loaded an earlier save game, even if something did go my way, just to try something different.
I mean, it's single player. They can do whatever they want, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about Iron Man only style and that's somewhat more recent. and generally only higher level play.
There are older games that would do Iron Man stuff. But yeah, yeah.
But the whole save scumming, blah, 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 mm-hmm. and negative connotation to that is much more recent.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's that recent. Civ 4 Hall of Fame ran that for pretty much the entire time, and they had a checker. Yeah, so if you reloaded it, they'd be like, not acceptable save.
But that's Hall of Fame, though. They want nice, clean games for comparison to other people. That's very different than just playing a game.
But that was the origin of Iron Man in the first place.
Nah, it was around before that, too.
Well, sure, but I mean, that concept, what you're looking for, comparable scenario to other players and a challenge to yourself.
Yeah.
But both of those are legitimate elements to playing Iron Man. And Iron Man goes back to really early stuff, probably at least in the original Firaxis game.
Quite frankly, there are some games where you can't. No, I know this is outside of Civ.
Oh, XCOM.
I'm just thinking like, there's some games where it's like, well, that wasn't even a choice, so.
Yep. FTL comes to mind.
Don't Starve. It's not a choice.
Don't Starve comes to mind.
Yeah.
It's not a choice. You die, you're dead. They delete the same
like
game.
Like Iron Man XCOM, like the first XCOM if you want it.
You know, my mentality is usually I don't expect to win every game of Civ that I start, and so that I've gotten to a point where I can't win or I don't think I'm going to win, I usually just start again with a new game or start the same game from turn one. But very rarely do I try to do something like, oh, I lost that wonder, I better go back 10 turns and like see if I can improve my production. That's kind of cheap.
I mean, yeah, you can do that. In Civ or any other game, if you save scum, it's kind of like, I don't reload, and so the consequence is having to deal with that choice, or I do reload, and the consequence is now to play these turns over again.
It's still a learning experience to me, though, because I used to play Sierra games, which pretty much trained you to save and make multiple saves, and death was around every single freaking corner.
Yeah. So I was part of the design in those games, man.
Yeah. But I mean, like Fuzzy just pointed out, reloading a game to see if you can get that world wonder, if it was actually possible or not. I actually see that as a learning experience, going back and seeing, okay, was there a better strategy I could have done?
No, sure, but if you do that, do you count it as a win if you win the game?
Yes.
Well, here's the thing, though. Even if you win the game or lose the game, you can save it at certain strategic points and compare, and that's very powerful.
I'm not saying it's a Hall of Fame, but for a personal win, yes, learned, okay, I should have done this strategy worked, the other one didn't. So long as that's just a roll of the dice.
Yeah, what he's won is knowledge on whether or not you can or not do it. If you are purely learning a game, then Iron Man tends to be the worst thing because you can't necessarily learn on Iron Man.
Well, no, I think you learn in that situation. You learn to hate the game.
Yeah, there's that. It depends on how interested in the game you are and how interested you want to restart constantly. But really, I mean, when it comes to Civ, the only time that Iron Man-ish style matters is if you're going to compare in the Game of the Month stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know why Hall of Fame got put in there, because Hall of Fame is all-inclusive of mass reroll until they get a good start.
No, yeah.
As far as the whole bringing a worker with you and healing the tile improvements and then repillaging them, it's not something I've ever done. I don't think it's something that you should have to do. A little bit as an exploit, it's built into the game, so I guess it's possible. But if that's what it takes for you to conquer a city, then maybe you should just bring in a couple extra units with you instead.
There are no problem with people doing stuff like that at all. No problem.
I know you don't, because you play on a high level.
That kind of stuff is not necessarily beneficial either. You know, someone who exploits different games extensively, if you just go using exploits willy-nilly, you can cost yourself instead.
Yeah, especially if those exploits get closed, and then you find out, oh, I don't know how to play this game.
Well, that's true, but even if they exist forever, you don't always want to be doing that, because that worker costs you in stuff to build, too. It can't attack the city, and so if you're not damaging the city enough, you're screwed. And on top of that, otherwise you're taking away a worker who's probably trying to build you useful improvements. It can be helpful if you need it. It's certainly an exploit that can give you an advantage. But if you're just using that every opportunity you get, nope, you're going to wind up behind.
You can steal their worker as you go in. And
sure, you can.
The cost of the worker is balanced by the fact that every turn you're pillaging. And when you pillage, you don't just heal, you get money. So you've paid for that worker as well.
Assuming you got it there.
See, that makes it sound like not an exploit, because there are...
No, it's totally an exploit. You should not be able to improve...
It doesn't feel like the Civ 1 exploits, where you can have a granary for like 80 turns being on build, and then switch it to the pyramids and instant build it. That's an exploit.
Oh, I loved contacting the AI over and over and over again. They get really angry and declare on you because you tried to talk to them too often. You can even do that to other human players, contacting them over and over, and they get pissed off and declare on you. If they didn't have a choice, the game would force them to declare.
In this pool, the third and the fourth items, first off, I use Info Addict to see information not available in the game, and then I used Unbalanced Mods.
Those are two different things.
Info Addict to see information not available in the game. It's not so much that the information is not available, it's that it's hidden.
And it's not that it's hidden necessarily, it's also that it's not really put in a way that's easily usable.
What information? It doesn't really feel like a cheat if it's there.
What kind of information would it provide? Could allegedly give you an unfair advantage?
Yeah.
You can see information about the game while you're in the diplomacy screen, where normally you don't, and you have to make decisions based on if you remember what was going on in the game before you hit the diplomacy screen.
Yeah.
And maybe even calculations based on information in the game, so you don't have to do it in your head. But
it doesn't feel cheaty.
Well, as compared to Unbalanced Mods,
yeah,
it's not really cheaty, because it's not modifying the game necessarily. Yeah, it is modifying
a modification to the game mechanics.
Yeah, it's modification of the information you get to see, but...
And modification of the user interface, not the actual gameplay itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, using the in-game editor to add change things in your favor.
Yeah, that's...
Okay, yeah, that...
Yeah, that's...
That's bad.
That is
definable. I mean, that's like taking steroids in Major League Baseball game or something like that.
You know, no, this is called removing the players from the outfield.
Mm-hmm. And making all the balls go right directly to the bat.
And in the thread itself, there was also qualitative discussion in terms of some of the terminology, specifically with regards to what is a cheat. Someone pulled out the definition of to deprive of something valuable by the use of deceit or fraud.
Mm-hmm.
As KRC says, you can certainly fool yourself, but you're not cheating yourself. There is no deceit. It's not as though you didn't watch yourself do those things. There is no fraud. There is no cover-up. Okay, it's kind of like laws and rules. All laws are rules, but not all rules are laws. And I think by fooling yourself, depending upon what it is that you are doing in terms of a cheat, because some of these on the poll are much more of a quote-unquote cheat than others, and how often you're doing it and how much of a habit is there. Because in a way, yeah, you are cheating yourself. If you're fooling yourself and then you're cheating yourself out of the experience, then if that somehow gets patched or you decide that you want to start comparing to other people's performances or you're trying to understand what it is that you're doing incorrectly, you're going to end up handicapping yourself or get yourself down a path, find it very difficult to compare and improve your performance because people are going to be like, well, why are you doing that? Don't do that.
You say, oh, I can win on deity, but you're always clicking legendary start. And are you really winning on deity?
If you're playing on deity and you choose legendary start, then you can say, I won on deity with a legendary start. You're still one.
There's like an asterisk there on the win on deity.
Well, the problem is, when do you stop taking off the asterisks?
Maybe we need to move from asterisks and just have in-text citations, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, have little notes. Like, how crazy do we want to get here?
Yep. Although Dino mentions in the thread that he doesn't really consider that reloading the start is necessarily cheating because you basically didn't play the game.
I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Some point later in the game, you do the whole revert 10 turns, 20 turns. You're on the line, you know.
Well, no, listen, if you're a science fiction fan, just view a reload this way. It's an alternate universe.
Right, yeah. That's how I do Kerbal Space Program. Worlds. Oh, that was just a simulation.
You can take all of those reloads and all those experiences and then apply it to another game. And even though you didn't reload that game, you had a comparable circumstance in a previous game. So have you in fact fooled yourself and cheated yourself?
What?
See, these are the kind of things that just
keep you up at night.
Just disintegrates the cheating argument here.
I like what Tribe Fanatic said in this thread. I tried not to abuse, for lack of a better term, the AI too much. Games just become too easy if you subvert the intentions of the game. And that's something that I personally, as a player, take very seriously throughout my gaming, is trying not to subvert the intentions of the designers of the game.
And then you get into questions of what really was the intent.
Yeah.
Is this a feature?
Yeah, or is this, you know, this hasn't been fixed over X patches. At which point does that go from, I don't believe it was the intention, to, well, the game dev hasn't bothered fixing it, so...
The only response I could say to that is, I know it when I see it.
I'm surprised stealing city-state workers wasn't on the list. I mean, if they're going to do the pillage heal on the list, stealing city-state workers has caused more trouble than that.
Thread started by Neo Kakodium I should have given Phil this topic so he could have butchered it instead of me, but that's fine. Essentially, habits that make your game non-optimal. And I'll just note that a little later in the thread, Bliss says, this thread is by far the most fun one. The way people assume their mistakes is just hilarious, shows how much everyone knows deeply about the game and still insist in doing their own experiments. And sometimes you really don't care whether it's optimal or not, which is also like, hey, I'm going to go ahead and reload the save. I don't care if it's optimal. I don't care if people find that it's cheaty, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to do it anyway.
I am hugely guilty of this, even in multiplayer games, as you guys know from playing with me. Why are you trying to build, you know, some stupid wonder? I don't know. Just felt like it, I guess.
Because you guys are three errors behind, damn it. Hurry up.
I made a top 10 out of all of these, specific without being too specific. In other words, it wasn't open to interpretation, but it was something that wasn't so niche. You're really only going to be upset if you do that with that particular civilization. But also not leaving open to, well, that sounds very general. Stormtrooper 412, tendency to unintentionally overlook city-state quests. I don't know how many times even I'd be like, why am I all of a sudden ally with the city-state? I wanted to go beat him up.
Yup.
D. Takar, late game, I tend to overdo settlement waves. Yeah, because it's one of those things where, oh, I could go ahead and settle this spot now because I've moved sufficiently up the technology tree that this terrain is not quite as bad as it used to be, so I could improve it, but is it really worth the effort in growing the city and the infrastructure and how many turns are probably left in the game? But I've got all this vacant land. It would be so much better if there were cities there, but that's probably not optimal.
I can't relate to that one because I like to go tall, so even in late game, I don't usually build more cities.
I can't relate to that one because it takes effort.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, what?
If you don't need the city, why build the city?
You're such a liar. Spread out cities like crazy. Or you all
know. Once the Renaissance pops out, it's not worth building another city.
Thank you. That's how I feel too.
Well, yeah, I usually have enough money to get those cities.
Tra-la-la-la-la.
Usually in my epic, huge world maps, I'll have enough money to get a city to be productive.
Lyrical Assassin also says, focusing too much on improving cities instead of expanding. And I know that, yeah, there's a little subjectivity in there, and maybe it's, hey, I want to improve the cities because, like Fuzzy, I prefer to go tall rather than wide. But I think there are times where it's like, okay, I want this city to be quote-unquote perfect, whatever is perfect in the mind before I decide to go and settle that particular spot. And then you go to settle it, and you realize you've been beaten to that spot by somebody else because you were too slow. Oops. I like Primicides. Improving land that a city isn't going to work soon when I could be improving a city that needs it. Ties back to our a little bit our discussion about do you improve tiles that are outside of the workable radius? But depending upon the city, even though there is a quote-unquote workable radius, what is the likelihood or even the possibility that a particular city is going to be able to use some of those tiles? As in, well, it's not going to grow anymore, so I could improve this because a city could work it, but it's never going to grow large enough, or if I switch to work it, then I'm actually going to start losing population. So now you've wasted time. It really becomes aesthetics in that case, where I've been guilty of that. It's like every possible tile that could be worked by the city must be improved so it looks right. And then I realized, look at all those turns I wasted, either not taking the worker to somewhere else where it could be improving, or in fact, I don't need that worker anymore. Let's disband it. Let's save the gold, and let's save the micromanaging already. Ugh.
Yeah, there is something to be said about pre-improving stuff for later growth. And a question of how long would it take to get this worker to the next city and then back eventually. But, you know, if you have a 5-pop city that's not growing and you have 12 improvements around it, you might have gone overboard.
On a side note, that is my bad habit. I hate Marker Micro. It has been the biggest barrier to me being really strong in any of the Civ games, is that it just the amount of effort it takes to plan that out is usually more than I'm willing to spend.
There was one item that was like in the very first post by I can't pronounce that. But basically saying waiting to heal completely any wounded unit. I don't see how healing your units is bad.
I do it too, but if you really don't need that to be at full strength in order to continue an attack, then there's no point in waiting for it to heal all the way. But I'm definitely guilty of doing that too.
Depends on how many turns it takes to heal versus somewhere else.
Like if they're about to die, they really should get out and get
healed. Well, I guess his point is that he always does that, and there are definitely cases where it is better to use a wounded unit than to leave it there for another 3 turns and heal it if it can do something more beneficial during that time period.
Especially if that unit could help you take, I don't know, the city. give you your own culture borders, which means you effectively double the healing rate at that point.
Yeah, that's an extreme example, but it's a good one. There are certainly times where it is better to attack wounded or do something with a wounded unit than heal it.
Or even just, oh, I could get rid of the Carpet of Doom here. Ah, my unit's only at half strength, and this is at quarter strength. There's no first strike situation. They're not going to be able to move away, but I'm not at full strength, so I'm going to wait. Hey, where'd that unit go? And this one I chose, it smiled, it made me think of a conversation, a discussion, maybe even a debate, imagine, and I had, oh, not so long ago on this show.
Uh-oh.
Dr. Victim says, I forget that I put my cities on production focus and get carried away by fast buildings, then my cities aren't as populated suddenly. And by debate, I mean a certain focus debate that we had at one point. But yeah, it's kind of one of those things, and I think even tying into when we talked about the natural wonder tier list, and we were talking about King Solomon's Mines, and it's, hey, this particular wonder is awesome. I want to settle for it immediately and work it immediately. And then it's, well, sure you can, but the city's not growing, giving up longer-term gains for a shorter-term boost, which in the end, one step forward, two step back kind of thing.
It just depends. If you're building buildings for building's sake, then yes, you're probably going too far. Although I tend to do that a lot too. Like, ooh, new building. Let's put it in. What did this do for me?
Really don't need a garden in the city, but it's the only building I can build, so I guess I'll build it.
That has happened to me where it's like, I just don't have anything to build. I'm not going to war. Like if I'm just waiting for my spaceship parts or waiting for a diplomacy vote and it's just build something, but I guess you could do science or money instead if that was the issue.
I was going to say, in a city, if push came to shove, if there's nothing constructive to build, then switch to some kind of, yeah, focus, where you take a quarter of your hammers and put it into science or culture or whatever. But I mean, that's pretty rare for me, and more later game, but that'd be better than just wasting turns.
Yeah, don't build canavasseries in one-tile islands.
Yeah. No, that's what stupid AI.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
stupid AI will
puppet,
always
puppet will do it.
Do it. Always.
I'll just jump ahead to number three, building every building in every city in terms of habits that make your game non-optimal, from Vitrivus. Yeah. Number five, not exploiting trade routes early enough. And I might even generalize it as not using trade routes early enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Depends on difficulty level and stuff. But yeah, if you don't slap down that trade route to the AI and get your +5 science per turn at turn 20... and, you know, wait till turn 70 to do that, yes, you have lost a lot of science.
Sure, there's some legwork in there to make it so that the trade route will be protected, or perhaps more generally described as not squished by barbarians. Do everything you reasonably can, because then otherwise you wasted all those resources in trade route that goes squish. But short of that, it's kind of an exponential thing. It's, oh, well, I'll just make up later because the yields will be higher later. Yeah, but then you didn't get to make use of the yields earlier on, whereas a portion of, say, your science output, it was much greater, which means you'd be that much farther along in the game at that point if you had done that. It's like investing money. Oh, I'll wait till I'm in 40 to start investing and saving for retirement. No, not if you do that when you're in 20s. Number four, trying to build too many wonders on higher levels, from Big Chief Lizzie. Yeah?
It's been a problem in every sim.
Story of my life.
Story of my life.
Wait, were you doing social distortion there, or were you doing something
Mackie
else?
Will reach through the internet and smack you, even though she is not here right now.
It'll be a delayed orbital facepalm.
A couple weeks from now, you just get nailed, and you're like, what was that for? And she's just like, you know what that was.
You know
for.
What you did.
And then my response will just be, yes, Mackie, contact!
Jesus.
Number two.
Really?
Yep. From Wolf Lions. Now, Wolf Lions typed this as keeping track of diplomatic relationships and end up destroying friendships by becoming buddies with those my other buddies hated. I think they meant not keeping track of diplomatic relationships.
Unless he's doing it on purpose. Like, I'm going to make friends with your enemies.
I've gotten better about that because you can't get away with that on the higher difficulty levels. You really have to know who your allies are enemies with. On the lower difficulty levels, you can get away with betraying an ally or something like that. But
lower difficulty levels, you don't need allies.
If you know you're untouchable,
right.
Well, people hate you, but what are they going to do about it? Bitch and moan? Well, okay, so be it. If you don't mind not being loved.
Sure.
Number one on this list, which is not a habit that I have ever practiced or have had anybody say, but I read it and I thought, uh-huh. From Socrates, being nicer to female leaders, even though I know they're just AI, and it's not a shred of difference. Think of
that is some neckbeard right there.
Yeah.
discussion.
She's a nice lady. Don't make fun of her.
You know,
her.
They
don't
make all kinds of games out there for people who are that level of lonely, for lack of a better word, for lack of a better politically correct word.
Yeah, let's stay away from that particular topic of discussion.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, in some cases, especially from Civ 4, some of those leader personalities annoyed me a lot. So.
Yeah.
Would you be interested in a trade agreement with England?
No. Die. Die.
This is a thread on the Civ Reddit asking, how about national park tile improvements? Username was Everyone Stop Shouting, which is a great username.
Thanks.
Written in all caps, mind written, you.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
I was thinking it would be cool to have national parks as tile improvements. It would remove all food, golden production from the tile, and give you some mixture of science, happiness, culture, or tourism. What do you think?
I found this very interesting, especially the suggestion to build it next to a natural wonder, get that increase in culture and tourism and science happiness, which I think later in the game it helps a lot, with, especially with tourism for your culture wins.
Culture, science.
Victory. Yeah, and a lot of times you need that extra happiness even at the late game if you don't have enough and you're trying to go to war or something. Yeah, so that could add to that.
My only issue with the improvement was actually addressed pretty early on in the thread by Wazar, which was ecology seems too late to get science from tile improvements, in my opinion. Biology would seem nice tech to put these on. Later than that, probably not worth it, because it's one of those things where if it gets too late in the technology tree, then how often are you going to be able to want to use it and be able to use it and then to be able for it to be worthwhile, the investment. So I like that. And for people who say, Polycast, you guys just talk about suggestions just to diss them and tear them down. Well, okay, we do that. We try to be constructive about it. But in this case, no, I'm all on board for this.
Mm-hmm. My thoughts are only marginally different than Great Person Landmark.
Well, you can ignore biology unless you need fighters.
Mm.
Otherwise, you just go to nukes and then backfill or messing with people. One of the two. Another tile improvement that gives you a mix of science, happiness, and culture or tourism. I would say culture, because then...
Well, yeah, you increase your culture, and then there's certain buildings that will then allow you to take that culture and general tourism.
There's a balance point in there. You could just put flat tourism down. That way you don't get the culture-related bonuses. Yosemite's not really a big culture thing. It's a touristy thing. It's not really a big culture thing.
Right.
And there's tons of national parks that have absolutely no culture. They're just like spaces that were just slapped down. But there's no science out of them either, and it doesn't really make a lot of people happy.
Well, I don't know. Grand Canyon, I think, is cultural and
it's a
science.
Hole in the ground. They said,
it's
hole.
It could be petroglyphs or other kind of remnants.
Then we have to argue what is culture, because I'm not sure. Because to me, it's referencing it and how conscious of it are people. People talk about the Grand Canyon all the time. I've seen it mentioned in movies, TV shows. It's like, what is culture then?
Mm.
Well, the movie and the TV show would be culture.
Well, that's why I'm suggesting that Grand Canyon is cultural.
Didn't you know Scott dug that hole with his shovel?
He did.
Mount Rushmore would be definitely cultural then.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's something that got made.
Certain. Yeah.
The Grand Canyon in the grand scheme of things would be more like a natural wonder.
But it also shows fossils in the different sediment layers. A whole bunch of scientists talking about what the Grand Canyon proves in science and whatnot.
There could be petroglyphs in the rocks that, you know, archaeological resources.
I mean,
could
they were
be,
charged,
but no one's allowed to dig it because it's a national park.
Right.
All right. I think I need to amend my earlier statement. So listeners, even when we agree on a suggestion for the game, what we will do is we will find a way to debate about how it will be visually represented in the game, what the artwork will be for that improvement, so we can in fact still have an argument.
Well, how
show.
Boring would
You're
the
welcome.
Show be if we all just agree
I came
on
here
everything?
For an argument.
I just enjoyed that.
I would agree with the concept of put it next to a natural wonder or wildlife preserves that was mentioned somewhere down there.
Putting it next to a natural wonder just had this vision of, yay, something else that a city-state can gobble up before I can.
Yeah. So here's a tip by OMG Haloy. If you've lost your food trade routes or are not prepared to population from ruins, and no, I didn't misread that, and go to starvation, put settler in production. You go to stagnation and don't lose population.
It reads don't lost population.
Yeah.
You're taking liberties with your reading after not taking them earlier.
Now imagine you did not correct the grammar in the first part of the tip and then you corrected it in the second. Be consistent.
No.
Yeah, you're not being consistent at all.
Okay, anyways. He's having a problem with Polynesia. There was a lot of ancient runes on a bunch of islands, kept getting extra pop from those runes, which means that his population was flying compared to his ability to actually feed them. So he threw his settler in his production to not lose population because the city will stagnate. And if you remove the settler from production, the citizens die. Funny that. Anyways, after making farms and completing settlers, he kept the population. So, okay, the tip of the day is, yes, if you make a settler and then don't put your production towards that settler, you can stave off loss of free population from stuff, or if you lost your food trade routes for long enough to get farms and other stuff back up. There you go.
You can usually deal with problems like this by buying a food tile in your perimeter if you have the cash. Or this is like a last resort kind of tip. I appreciate the tip, but I don't anticipate ever having to actually do this myself.
Yeah, this is more like one of those random, wow, you managed to get a lot of plus one pops.
It's a very niche tip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I mean, the concept of settlers stopping population growth or loss, that's always been the case since the beginning.
Yeah. So,
been around, although I don't think anybody's ever blatantly said that, but it's there. And then the conversation.
Yeah.
Even though the tip was all about that, the conversation had nothing to do with it.
No, it had to do with a mod that would allow you to cycle through what you got through ruins.
Basically stealing the unique...
The Shoni.
Yeah.
Ability.
Hey!
Here's good old-fashioned thread, Jack.
People talk about whether or not the mod is cheating. Durr, it's a mod.
Oh my gosh, does that tie into a previous topic we talked about on this episode? No.
It's a mod. Not. You can't call it cheating because it's a mod. The whole point of the mod is to modify the game. Of course you're changing stuff.
How dare you apply a mod? That is not the intention of the developers. Oh, wait. You know, you could actually say that because modding is part of the game from the beginning, if you don't play with mods, you're actually not playing the game as intended by the developers.
Yeah, subverting the intention, yeah.
You are, and you should be ashamed. Don't you thread, Jack. No more, no more, no. Okay.
Anyways, now that we've jacked up this thread.
Oh, God. Why?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Firaxis Mega Panel at PAX South.
A couple weeks ago now.
And 2 weeks minus 1 hour from the previous
episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
We could have talked about it beforehand.
We could have, but the video of the whole panel wouldn't have been available. So the fact that it was available for us to discuss now in the interim, it was actually a good thing, even though at the time it seemed like an annoying scheduling.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Bad timing.
They talked about Starship Games.
They showed a demo.
And most of the forum thread was about, well, if they don't talk about Beyond Earth, obviously it's been abandoned.
I'm tired of these people.
Even though it's a panel about talking about a different game.
There was that, and there was also someone get Sid a glass of water.
Yeah, Sid really needs glasses of water or something.
I'm your host, Chris Waters. I'm going to be moderating the discussion today as we talk about Sid Meier's Starships and Civilization Beyond Earth.
There was a little conversation about how it connected to Beyond Earth and the inspiration for Starships, which was rooted in the story that Beyond Earth was looking to tell.
I'm Sid Meier.
I'm Will Miller.
And I'm David McDonough.
Will Miller and David McDonough were co-lead designers on Civilization Beyond Earth.
A few quotations that kind of jumped out, seeing as how it related to Beyond Earth more specifically than Starships.
It's important to note that Starships exists in the same fictional universe as Beyond Earth, but it's not Beyond Earth 2. You know, there's still a lot of Beyond Earth story left to tell. This is a new thing. You don't have to have Beyond Earth to play it. You don't have to have Starships to play Beyond Earth. There's some connections between the two, which we're going to let you figure out.
Well, they kind of did that with Beyond Earth as well, which is, well, we could tell you things like what our theory of the Great Mistake is, but they told us that later, after people had played the game for a little while and then formed their own opinion.
When I was 12 years old, the original Star Trek series came out on television. I remember every
Friday night, rushing home to watch Star Trek and the Wild Wild West. I think as a young teenager, that left an impression on me. But since then, I really haven't had a chance to write a science fiction game. When I saw what Will and Dave were doing with Beyond Earth, they had really created this awesome story, this really compelling story, as mankind leaves Earth and settles on a new planet and struggles to kind of establish themselves there. And it really seemed like there was an opportunity for me to kind of take this fascination with science fiction that I had developed as a kid and kind of tell the next chapter in that story. And really, Starships is about what happens when we leave that planet.
If some people are going, just a minute, there is this thing called Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri. Yes, except Sid was not the lead on that. That was Brian Reynolds.
People have asked us, well, how do these people live for 500 or 1,000 years to connect Beyond Earth to Starships? Well, it's science fiction, you know, so we don't worry about that. They're cool, or we want them back.
The leaders that you get to know in Beyond Earth are still around in time for Starships.
We've been playing a game where we can be a ruler for 6,000 years, and they're just questioning it now.
You don't even change your outfit. You're just wearing, like, modern-day clothing in 3,000 BC, other than Civ, like, what, 2 or 3? I think it was Civ 3 that they actually did, but other than that.
Actually, the player got the snub in Civ 2 in diplomacy because you talked to a herald of the civilization.
True.
You never actually talked to the leader. That was harsh, man.
Mm-hmm. That herald was temperamental, too.
The best comment.
We did not steal a team from another project, and whatever game you want us to make, we're probably making it right now, so don't worry about it.
I was like, well done, Sid. Well done.
Nice and succinct. Although that's quite the statement, because he did not specify traditionally for Axis titles.
Yeah.
You working on the next Madden, Sid?
Yeah.
Yeah? No?
Yeah. Maybe he is.
It's Madden Beyond Earth.
Be the first well-balanced Madden title in years. So, yeah, there you go.
I think what he means by whatever game you want us to make, I think there's going to be a crossover with 2K Studios, and we're going to have Grand Theft Auto Civilization.
That'd be
pretty awesome. Maybe the supremacy, the cyborg implants might make you live longer, so maybe you can live 1,000 years with supremacy.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured, is that science makes them live forever.
Science?
But knowing how leadership tends to behave, even Purity could have that plausibly, because they tend to treat themselves differently than their people. So,
speaking of such affinities in Starship, the beginning, you choose an affinity.
How many Harmony fans do we have in the house? That's not a lot. Supremacy? What about Purity? All right, sounds like y'all a bunch of robot-loving...
Some good
explorers of space.
Who among us actually did watch this panel and watch the whole thing?
I did as well.
What do you guys think of Starships?
I thought it might be interesting. I like the concept of building a fleet and flying around planets and, you know, conquering them. I find it a little weird that an entire planet would only have 5 cities or just one. But, you know, even if you've been there for 500 years, it's like, really, just 5 cities? But I like the concept. I guess it's going to be a full game, probably $50 or something, so I'm just not sure that that's a $50 game.
Reiterated there that this is not an expansion for Beyond Earth.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a sequel for Beyond Earth, and you do not have to have Beyond Earth to play this game. And I remember back when Civilization IV Colonization was being developed, which was you do not have to have Civilization IV in order to play this game. But there's more of a connection between Civilization Beyond Earth and Starships than there was between Civilization IV and Civilization IV Colonization, which is Starships is 500 to 1,000 years in the future. And the developers are making some statements about some people who are already like, oh, I guess we know which contact victory actually won. Gee, I guess we know which affinity ended up, you know, coming out on top. But that's their take, where now that you are established on another planet, then you find out that there are, in fact, other planets, because it was an opportunity to explore certain design decisions that they said no to with Beyond Earth, which was, can you have multiple planets in Beyond Earth?
Mm-hmm.
No. But guess what? Now you can have multiple planets with Starships.
I also wanted to compare this to the Final Frontier scenario in Civ 4. You would take solar systems, not just a single planet, but you would have a solar system and they would have multiple planets and they would have resources in these planets that you would have to work on. I guess that planet is representing a solar system, but it doesn't really make sense, actually, because by this point, you should have technology to colonize planets that aren't Earth-like.
I don't know. Maybe this goes back to what Will Miller was saying about there are connections between, you know, starships and beyond Earth that we're going to let you figure out when you actually play starships, things that we're not going to explain.
Mm-hmm.
I guess time will tell. I like the connection with beyond Earth, which is what got me to pay attention to it in the first place. Just wait and see what comes about.
It did actually zoom in when they did the battle. So, yeah, I think the planet is just a representation of the solar system. Because I do remember when he went to another planet to fight the raiders, it zoomed in and there was asteroids all around the planet. And I think I could see the sun for that planet, like in the distance. So that was okay.
Our fleet is up here next to her territory. Apparently she doesn't care for us all that much. That will be her problem shortly.
It might be a little bit too streamlined for some.
Overly simple is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah.
We don't know everything about the game, so we can't really say for sure that it's going to be.
What is for certain is that this confirms that the view that, Firaxis is just the Civ Studio. No. No, it is not.
People already know that because
they call us harsh.
And even if that was true, would that be so bad?
Not for us.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 441-212-88-7659. That's 441-212-88-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
The siege bonus for battering rams is plus 250-300%, somewhere in there. And the negative for attacking from the water is only minus 50%. You still have a unit that does a massive amount of damage, but it can't be shot directly from a city or an archer because you now have a trireme blocking over top of it.
This sounds delicious. And very much like the Tritons actually operated too.
Use the triremes to get shot, but use the battering rams to do massive damage to cities. That is a good use of guns in triremes. But you might as well go honor if you're going to do all that anyways.
But you always go honor. Oh.
I always go honor, but mostly to get up to the point where if you are going major naval, then it can be worth going honor just for the reduced cost in upgrading and the getting money for killing things.
This has been Polycast number 221, and you've been joined by our fearless leader, Dan Quick.
Looking upward.
Imagine.
Looking downward.
And the VN team.
Operating only in good taste, looking straight ahead.
Fuzzy Fractal, our guest co-host.
When you pledge to thepolycast.net, you're automatically entered to win a trip to Dan's house.
And filling in as a guest co-host, me, Alpha Shard. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, I'm glad you added that, because you referred to Andrew as the guest co-host, and I was going to be like, I guess Scott just kicked Mackie off the show.
Yeah. Scott's off the planet.
The main co-host, though. I mean, he's guest, and the guest, I'm just filling in for the main co-host.
Yeah, you're
Scott seven. Has appointed Over. Himself. He is anointed. Scott is now the only woman on the internet.
What?
Good luck, Scott.
You don't want that, Phil.
No, sure. I don't, but you're the one that did it.
I did.
You're going to have to hold up to the role now, and it's a lot of pressure, so I wish you luck.
And I also wish people luck figuring out which Dan's house comes with the prize that Andrew was talking about.
Oh, you know, they know.
They know.
That was about one-third sweet, two-thirds creepy.
What the girls all say about me.
Wait, all the girls?
All the girls.
You have more than one?
All the girls. One in each area code, Dan.
Damn!
So has your girlfriend listened to the show? If she doesn't, what's her email address? I'll get her to send her a link.
We know her name is Molly, so that should be easy, right?
Well, there's only one Molly in the world, so you're in trouble now, puzzle. So your boss, what's his email address? Does he listen to... No, I'm kidding.
She's actually female.
I like that. She's actually female. Really?
Yes. Yes.
I'm glad you told me.
What? A woman in charge? Oh, Mackie's not here. Never mind.
Far and away the best boss I've ever had.
What, Mackie?
I don't know. Maybe she is. Maybe Mackie would be. I don't even know what she does, so.
What do you mean, what does Mackie do? She's the only woman on the internet.
The full-time position. I just need your address for the party that we're having at your place.
I guess I'm not going to be here for that, because it's just a party at my place. There's no mention of me being there. Ouch. Yeah,
Recorded February 7th, 2015. Firaxis Games Mega Panel at PAX South 2015, copyright 2K Games. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.